Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.
This program is brought to you from the Margaret Farrow Studio.
This week on Rewind, your week in review. Mandela Barnes exits the race for governor and calls for Democratic Party unity against Tom Tiffany. And the remaining Democratic candidates make their case on the debate stage. Plus, an appeals court upholds Act 10. All that and more on Rewind Your Week in Review for July 31st.
I'm Ani Van Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
Welcome to Rewind. What a year this week has been. We will start with a sort of big breaking news from yesterday, which is that Mandela Barnes dropped out sort of surprisingly. I was taping my other show for Wisconsin Public Radio, and it came through, and we had to retake our entire show. So we're hoping no such breaking news comes through today. But he posted a video on social media where he didn't name Francesca Hong, but he said it's clear who the nominee is going to be. Let's take a look at that video, and then we'll talk about it.
Last night, I had a very difficult conversation with my staff. Now, we're incredibly proud of all the things that we've accomplished and all the resources that we have raised to spread our message. But it's become very clear who our nominee is going to be. Now, while I may be suspending this campaign, I'll never give up my fight for Wisconsin. And I'm incredibly grateful for all the folks who joined this campaign, for the people who believed in me in this movement and knew that we had a real shot at creating opportunities through bold action to improve quality of life for every single person that calls this place home. Now, we have to do everything we possibly can to defeat Tom Tiffany.
All right, so calls for party unity, that the most important thing is to attack Tom Tiffany in the fall. And as I mentioned, didn't mention Francesca Hong, but I think when he says it's obvious who the nominee is going to be, that's who it is. That did not look like a happy man making a happy decision. What do you think?
So if you go back to the original announcement by Mandela in December he's going to run, the expectation was, okay, best known candidate in the field for governor among Democrats, national fundraising network from his race for Senate in 2022. This guy is going to lock down this nomination in the early part of 2026, blow away the field, and take on Tom Tiffany. And it never happened. And the question was always why? And in talking to people after the implosion of his campaign, it's been it never felt like he really burned to do the job. He really had this, I want to be governor and this is my vision. There wasn't this effort of, I'm going to really pound the doors, hit the phones hard to raise money. It was it's going to come to me because I'm Mandela Barnes. It's going to come. And it never did. And if you look at his 2022 race, was this ad he did making a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, and it's called Crumbs. Talk about how he paid his taxes. He's going to be attacked by his tax bills. And he's saying how he lived on peanut butter sandwiches for a while. Really kind of didn't go over well with people in 2022. Fast forward to 26, his ad was in a flannel shirt in a bar talking to me about rising costs. And people are that's not authentic. Now, I'm not sure what Mendel wears every day, but most of I've seen him have not been in a flannel. And Francesca Hong, in contrast, has been authentic every single day, warts and all, right? Whatever she is authentic. And she has really kind of connected to the primary base, where Mandela never really did. And the polls have shown he's just kind of lagged and just kind of been slowly receding in the background while she's been taking off.
Yeah, and there was the big moment, obviously, when David Crowley returned to the race with the backing of Governor Tony Evers, who was, of course, the governor when Mandela Barnes was lieutenant governor. Some perceived that as a snub. So there were all these kind of ways in which I think, as you say, there was also concern from Democrats about whether the fact that he lost to Ron Johnson mm-hmm. in 2022, how that reflects on him as a candidate who can win in the fall. And then, of course, the other kind of elephant in the room is that the Journal Sentinel then this morning published a story about allegations that he has used his position of power to have sexual encounters with younger women. What they revealed is that the Democratic Party allegedly investigated these claims, didn't find anything actionable. He, in a statement, said, you know, I am a single man. I have made some immature choices, but no true allegations of sort of wrongdoing. But that was also in the mix yesterday is, you know, what is this story going to be that's going to come out about him?
So there have been rumors about Mandela and his personal life for years. None of them had come forward and talk to us on the record. The Journal Sentinel had one woman who said she was 20. She was anonymous in the story. So when she's 21 years old. She was at the State Party Convention in 2018. I think Mandela was like a decade older. They had been drinking. She had been drinking heavily. They had sex. I think one of her quotes is that he should have known she was not in a position to have an enthusiastic yes, was her words, I believe. They dated for relations for months afterward. It wasn't the story that people kind of thought of. He used position of power to coerce somebody into a relationship. Now, I'm not trying to diminish right or wrong here or anything like that, just trying to look at it from a political perspective. In talking to some of my sources, their thought was, look, what adults do is what adults do. The issue here is judgment. Okay, he was in a position of power as a candidate for lieutenant governor in 2018 to really force somebody who's an activist to do anything. However, it's bad judgment in their mind to be a candidate for statewide office and hook him up with a college kid, all right? That's a problem. Now, my question is, one, what does this do from the future? Like, can he run for office again? He lost in 2022. Did he get the primary in 2026? What's his future? And it kind of goes back to, like, why'd you run the first place if you knew the stuff's in your background? Now, one answer I got was, well, it didn't come up in 2022. They spent millions and millions of bucks against him, and it never came out, so why do you think he would? Other one was just plain hubris. He thought he had nothing wrong, so why would it be a problem in the campaign?
Yeah, and so, you know, the other obviously big question is, you know, I think 140,000 some odd absentee ballots have already been sent in. Obviously, early voting is underway, so some amount of his votes have already been cast. But then where do his voters go now? Do they go sort of further left into the Hong lane? Do they go a little bit more at center to the Crowley Roy's Brennan lane? And I think that also speaks to some of the challenge that he had, which was trying to distinguish himself as a progressive sort of a la Fran while she was getting all of the hype and excitement.
There's one poll out on Tuesday that showed of Barnes's voters, 27% went to David Crowley and 26% to Francesca Hong. This illustrates a problem here. In talking to people pre-Mandela dropping out, the word I got was, look, there's no way to stop Francesca Hong with Mandela and Crowley in the race. Now, Barnes is out, and they're going, there's no real clear way to stop Francesca with Mandela out. Now, is there a path? Sure. I went back and looked. Crowley, two groups back, you know, spent about $1.6 million on ads between the day he got back in July 18th and the primary August 11th. So there's money being spent. Governor Evers had a fundraiser for him tonight in Milwaukee. They did one last night in Madison. They're going to campaign together. The governor's putting his legacy on the line, essentially, with Crowley. There's a shot there. But Francesca's consolidating support. And it was clear that Mandela's going to catch her. And so some of the vibe coming out of Mandela world is this story from the General Senate wasn't why he dropped out. It was clear he wasn't going to win the nomination. That's why he dropped out. And if you go look, his campaign manager, there was a video of Governor Evers saying, I was surprised by this. And she tweeted back at him, that's because we can read a poll, Governor, unlike your team. So some raw feelings between Team Mandela and Team Evers. Was worth, but it's clear that they knew they couldn't win in this entire environment, no matter what was going on with this story at the Journal Sentinel.
Yeah, there has been quite a lot more kind of like nasty social media barbs being traded, but you could not necessarily have told that from the debate, which was on Tuesday before Mandela dropped out, where it was pretty boring, and they all got along pretty well and, you know, didn't necessarily take those kinds of shots at each other that have been going on social media. So once again, we'll take a look at some of their statements and then talk about it.
I was never born into the establishment. I was actually born into struggle. I grew up in the 53206 zip code where I had to work extremely hard for everything that I have. And so I'm not here to protect the establishment. I'm here to deliver real results for Wisconsinites all over our state.
We are the only campaign to support a moratorium on AI data centers, and we have found broad bipartisan support. I am looking forward to helping the Democrats become the big tent party that they've aimed to be for many years.
I served as the top appointee money to Governor Evers. We created the largest budget surplus in state history. We increased the rainy day fund. I will put my qualifications on those issues up against anybody in this race.
I am the candidate in this race that brings the most experience in and around state government, with 10 years of service in the legislature and the only one who served on the state budget committee. And for over 20 years, I've been the candidate that has turned progressive ideas, like the kind that all of us have on this stage, into law.
So I think one of the things that really stood out is that, you know, in a week where the theme is how Francesca Hong is just kind of like running away with this race, that she was not kind of being piled on by the other candidates. Oftentimes you will see that in these types of primaries. What were some of your takeaways?
Nobody went after her. The only swipe that I saw was Mandela made a comment about David Crowley and like being propped up by special interests.
Also then a comment on social media about height as well.
There was a picture of David on a box behind the podium that Mandela's team tweeted out. Yeah, kind of interesting. But even debate, you know, debates don't really change races unless there is a viral moment, one that you can capture, put into a TV ad, go on social media, and like a big good moment for you or a big gaffe. You know, if you have the giant gaffe that haunts you for years, whatever. There's none of that, you know. And Francesca Hong did fine. She unscathed. She answered questions about like, well, you said defund the police before. Well, a governor can't defund the police. You can debate that, you know, about finances and stuff. But she said, basically, answer the question. Now, afterward, in the spin room, there's a moment where reporters asked her about her past comments, and she answered some questions. And that kind of got a lot of attention on social media. Interesting line that she had. You can't get tough on crime unless you get tough on the causes. Now, is that Francesca Hong, like, figuring out a message to, like, the defund police stuff? Maybe. Pretty good one, some people told me. So we'll see how that takes, but the debate didn't change anything. There wasn't any like big moment where you go, oh, that's going to change this race and elevate so-and-so or drop so-and-so.
And you and I were talking during the break about the fact that this is coming, again, well after people have been voting absentee, while early voting is underway. It's the only debate. Joel Brennan has released a statement calling for an additional debate, especially with Barnes dropping out, because there's a way in which, you know, it comes pretty late, and so people are either have already made up their minds or it doesn't necessarily give them enough information to do so. And five people on a stage over the course of an hour, like how deep can you actually kind of go for people who really are undecided, which we'll look at polling in a minute, is still a lot of voters.
It's more important at this point how much you're spending on TV, radio, digital, than it is how many debates you do. That's just a fact of life in campaigns. If you're not up in the air in a meaningful way, you're not communicating to voters anymore.
So let's take a look at those polls. And I know that you have some caveats that you always like to throw on these. But Marquette redid their polling after all of the deck shuffling. Though, of course, at the announcement of this poll, Charles Franklin, who organizes it, said, I am pleased to say we managed to do an entire week of polling and no candidates changed. And then, of course, Mandela Barnes dropped out. And so the results reflect that. But again, it's sort of what we continue to see, which is Hong far and away leading the pack. In this case, Barnes was second. Crowley was a fairly distant third. What did you make of this? And then, I should say, a third of voters remain undecided.
So caveats are, you know, the Marquette poll, great in the fall, general election matchups. Primaries, spring elections, not so great. Remember in late March, it had the race for Supreme Court, like 5 or 6 points, and Taylor won by 20. It's tricky to poll, period. It's trickier to poll a spring race and a primary because who's really turning out, you know? Like, if you pick apart the methodology, we do have open primaries in Wisconsin, but like 36% of the voters are going to be independents in the primary. People are skeptical about, okay, fine. There was a poll the day before had basically the same message, and I've been told by people, while Crowley folks are saying, hey, these numbers are, this method is flawed, we don't have an alternative. And I'm hearing from my Dem sources, the private polling matches what Marquette's saying, which is that Francesca Hong's consolidating support and moving away with it. Can you stop her? Maybe. It's a Hail Mary at this point, but it's clear that she is connecting with primary voters in a way that these other guys are not.
Yeah, as you mentioned, you know, if you take the Barnes voters and then from that same poll, who they said it's their second choice, it doesn't change the ultimate results. There were also polls from Main Street Action, which is a sort of liberal pro-business group, and then the Institute for Reforming Government, which is a conservative group. Main Street Action also found Crowley and Barnes more tied, again, for a distant second. And then the Institute for Reforming Government, which is interesting, they didn't quite ask the same types of questions, but what they found was that independent voters overall lean towards Tiffany, that Tiffany does trail Hong, Crowley, and Barnes, but not significantly, by like 1 to 3 points. constraints. And so when push kind of comes to shove, and again, once all the money starts getting spent in the general, how does that kind of play out?
Yeah, and the generic ballot in that IRG poll was +6 for Democrats. So Tiffany's doing better than that. Now, we are away with the margin of error differences, so I hate saying there's a lead or up or down, whatnot. But the fact is that we're Wisconsin. It's a pretty purple state. And come November, if there are resources on both sides and everybody's fully engaged, it's going to be nip and tuck, maybe a couple, 3 points. And we'll talk later in the show about Francesca Hahn's chances in November.
We certainly will. Let's turn to the courts. A lot of action in the courts this week. One of the really big, though not terribly surprising, outcomes was about Act 10. So this is this lawsuit that went through Dane County Circuit Court first, and they found that Act 10 is unconstitutional because it divides classes of public servants, so essentially most government workers and then public safety workers. Then it went to appeals court in Waukesha. This is often the path that goes from liberal Dane County to conservative Waukesha County, and they overturned this. They found that there is a rational basis for separating out those groups. What did you make of this ruling, and what's next?
Supreme Court, liberal majority, that's what's next. Look, if you go into these classes, the issue is that there are some public safety employees who are covered and some who are not. And the groups that sued said, why is a DNR 8, a conservation warden, not covered? Why is a Capitol police officer not covered? Why is a UW police officer not covered? Covered by Act 10, whereas local officers are not. Or motor vehicle inspectors, state patrol, are not. Now, cynics argue because those unions endorsed Scott Walker in 2010. I'll leave it to them to say that. The appeals court said, look, there's a rational basis here because what they did was, could they maximize savings while minimizing the chance of a public safety disruption? So in their minds, essentially, UW police, DNR wardens, Capitol police, they're not going to really be a big factor in public safety, whereas municipal officers are. Ergo, it's okay to exempt them from Act 10, but not these folks. So now we go to the Supreme Court. It'll be 5-2 liberals after Chris was sworn in August 1st. And most people you talk to would bet that they're going to overturn the second district and then Act 10 will go away. Now, my question is, what happens afterward? So let's game this out. Look, we were talking about a great Democratic year a few months ago. This Democratic primary is kind of imploding in all kinds of crazy ways. Is this enabling Republicans to find a toehold to win the governor's office, hold the assembly, and hold the Senate? Maybe. If they get a trifecta, could they bring back Act 10? Maybe. But there's all kinds of unknowns right now, and this race politically is changing like the dynamic for what Act 10 could look like the next couple of years.
Very fascinating. Also, with a little bit more immediate impact, there was this question of whether, again, voters that have cast ballots for either candidates that have since dropped out or who would have wanted to vote for somebody who dropped out and then perhaps got back in 10 days later, whether they could spoil their ballots and recast those votes. And a court came out and said, no, the unambiguous language of the statute does not allow a voter to spoil an absentee ballot after it is returned. The argument in the lawsuit was that you can't change the rules about absentee voting midway through absentee voting. And so, of course, like changing the people who are actually eligible to be voted for is changing that. But you can still actually vote for Missy Hughes on, you know, election day if you would like. So that kind of cleared that question. And then the other kind of interesting election-related lawsuit had to do with 2024. In the city of Walworth, they kept their polls open 2 hours later per a judge's order. Now, almost 2 years later, a judge has said that that was not allowed. The court clearly erred in finding that voting delays were caused by inadequate staffing, and so you're not allowed to change polling hours without sort of an act of the legislature.
So let's talk about the polling first. It's in Whitewater. Judge basically reopened the polls and said, hey, you can still vote. The Second District Court of Appeals in Waukesha said, we want to rule on this because it's important to set a standard for future years, because we're Wisconsin, could be nip and tuck every year, that you can't do this, right? That you exceed your authority in doing this. Spoiling the ballots won. I haven't seen any kind of appeals yet. I've been asking about that, but you talked about the method of going to Dane County first in Waukesha. If you're a Democrat, go to Dane County and lose, not a great look for the future of your lawsuit.
And so, again, I think that there will be, you know, one of the many outcomes of this election is going to be some amount of anger from Democrats who feel like they wasted their votes on Rodriguez before she dropped out, or not getting to support Crowley, or voting for Barnes.
Remember, we have to send absentee ballots under federal law 40-some days out from election. That's why they're there, because of Help America Vote Act from the early 2000s. We don't have a choice. I guess you could argue that if we moved our primary to different or even earlier, but that's what we have to do. So that's what kind of happens with these things.
Yeah. Will has also filed their latest kind of race-based lawsuit, this one over UW-Madison race-based scholarships. They name in their lawsuit a particular, the Minority Retention Grant Program, but they argue that there's like 20 other scholarship or grant programs like this. And we've been talking about this. This is kind of the latest response to this 2023 decision in the Supreme Court that curtailed affirmative action. And they have said basically, like, this is now their going forward, like, they're going to kind of chip away at anything that resembles that in the universities of Wisconsin system.
Dan Lindenstein's attorney for Will, immediately after that ruling, he had like a hit list, essentially, like 8 or 9 programs. Said, hey, if you want to sue, get in touch with us. Well, this is number 2 of that list, second of people on this list. So there'll be more lawsuits on that list before long.
One of the things I also think is interesting here is that they are representing the Young American Foundation, which is Scott Walker's sort of college age nonprofit. And so it'll be interesting to see if this is kind of one use of that group is to find plaintiffs for these types of lawsuits. So very fascinating there. That brings us to the stock report. Rising, perhaps no surprises, Francesca Hong.
So we talked all about the dynamic of the primary. Let's kind of look forward to November. All right, and now I'm not predicting she's going to win, but it looks most people think that I talked to you think she's going to win. So if she wins, then what? Well, she is a opposition researcher's dream. I mean, she's talked about defund the police, abolish the Senate, white supremacy, like you go on down the list. She gave an interview last year talking about how when she was 18, she was diagnosed as bipolar, she overdosed on lithium, she was hospitalized, she was self-harming. I'm not making light of that whatsoever. But if you are in a campaign and you can use something, you will. And it might be disgusting to us as human beings, but that's how politics work. So my question is, how does she win in November? That's what's driving Governor Evers getting behind David Crowley. That's the whole question for Democrats, can she win November? And the answer is maybe, with the right resources, right environment. So let's talk about the environment first. Number one, the Marquette poll a week ago had Donald Trump as worst numbers in Wisconsin ever, his whole 2 terms in office. Number 2, I've seen polls out this week nationally have him like in the 30s, basically where he was after January 6, 2021. That's not good. Gas is back on the rise. So if you have Donald Trump in the 30s, if you have gas at $4 a gallon, you have a real problem as a Republican with the affordability issue. Okay, that's real. The resources piece. The feedback I've gotten so far is that if Hong wins the primary, the National Democrats will play for at least a few weeks, see what's going on. Is there a path there? If there is, they'll stay engaged. If there's not, they'll pull out, or they'll start moving money toward the state Senate, and then the Assembly trying to prevent a Republican trifecta. So if you're Francesca Hong, how do you give them a reason to stay? Like, what do you do? Well, it could be interesting to go after Tom Tiffany. He has spent $6 million on TV so far, all about what a folksy great guy is, and he's done an excellent job, people tell me, with his ads and the message. What he hasn't talked about is that he supported a national abortion ban after heartbeats detected. He voted to overturn election results in 2020. He is tied at the hip with Donald Trump. If you prosecute that case in an environment where Donald Trump's unpopular and gas is high, that causes you a problem. Now, you could have an election, which is basically on this side, you've got a deranged communist trying to destroy democracy. On this side, you have abortion-hating, Trump-loving threat to democracy, right? Well, it may not be a very uplifting election come October. That said, there's a path. When I talk to people, though, they'll admit, Democrats as well, Tom Tiffany's in a very good spot right now. Unless that Trump thing really kind of bite him in the butt, and that could be a problem. So again, are there going to be resources there? How does Hong start to message stuff? She went on Fox News and talked about all these, you know, comments she made in the past and defended herself. If you're going to be tough on crime, be tough on the causes, great line. You can get more help. Like, there are a lot of unknowns, but there's a path there. It's going to be tough. It'd be tougher with Hong than with some others. But Republicans I talked to, some of them are giddy. They think this is going to be just, it's going to make holding the assembly easier. They're going to hold the Senate in their minds before they were like all worried about it. They're going to the governor's office. It's going to be great. Other Republicans are like, be careful what you wish for. Because remember in 2016, we sat there in October and said, there's no way Donald Trump's going to win. And he drove this turnout of people who weren't normal voters. Does Francesca Hong do something similar? I'm not predicting she will. It's going to be tough. If you made me bet my mortgage payment right now, I'd take the odds with Tom Tiffany just because it's the smarter bet. But there's a path there for her if they can find the resources and the right environment to pull it off.
Mixed this week is Ben Wickler, former Democratic Party chair.
So it's been no secret, Madison, he's going to run for office someday. There was no surprise in his book tour that, hey, he's going to run for office someday. But now NBC News nationally has reported that he is feeling people out about getting on a campaign, that, you know, wait till after 26 to do this, but okay, he's going to run for U.S. Senate. Is he a good candidate for U.S. Senate? That's the big question. So on the one hand, he is a phenomenal fundraiser. I think when he left, announced in April of 25, he wasn't going to run again, the party told me he'd raise like $200 million, roughly, between the state and federal accounts during his time. That is unbelievable amount of money. So he's got that going for him. He doesn't talk to real people. He talks to media folks. He talks to party activists. He talks to donors. But he's never gotten shaken the flesh, pressed the flesh with like donor voters in a diner. Like, that's not his forte. Number two, he's always been in politics. He's always been an operative. He's never been like something else. Now, Herb Kohl, he won U.S. Senate race after he'd been state party chair. But Herb Kohl had two things going for him. Number one, besides being wealthy, number one, he owned the Milwaukee Bucks. Number two, every Wisconsinite had shopped in a store with his name above it when he walked into the door. Like, he was Herb Kohl. Everybody knew Herb Kohl. Ben Wicker's not Herb Kohl. So how does he win? Oh, and then two, who else might want to run in 2028 as a Democrat? So, you know, Alex Lazary ran in 2022, dropped out before the primary, saying that Mendel was going to win. By the way, side note, Mandela Barnes dropping out was 4 years and one day after the last of his rivals for U.S. Senate dropped out in 2022 to say he's going to win. Just a side note. Anyway, so Lazary, you know, maybe. Sarah Galuski, people mentioned sometimes. Now, she's running for lieutenant governor. It'd be tough to win the lieutenant governor's office in November, sworn in January, trying to run for something else months later. But, you know, names will come out. And also, what about the Democratic Socialist? Look, with Francesca Hong and the Senate candidate in Michigan, if they win, that will embolden the DSA to run somebody else. If they lose, it probably snuffs out that. But there will be competition. He's been a great fundraiser, but will he be the right candidate? We shall see.
You know, and I think the other piece to that is just that, like, whenever these, again, the deck gets shuffled, there are, like, backdoor promises, and there's a lot of loyalty. And there's a lot of loyalty within the party to Ben Wickler because he has helped fund so many people's races. So it'll also be interesting to see if he gets in the race, like, who wants to go up against someone who's done them a lot of favors. Falling is Kirk Bangstad.
The State Department of Revenue might do what the locals couldn't, put him out of business. So this has been a saga with Kirk for years where he's fought with the local government agencies about zoning ordinances and parking and a Biden-Harris sign out front of his tap room up in, or brewery up in Minocqua, the whole nine yards. Well, now Department of Revenue has basically revoked his permit to run a brewery. Basically, he had this whole thing where, like, he brewed beer in Illinois and moved it up here. And packed, but it's a convoluted story because that's what it's like with Kirk. But he's basically on the verge of being put out of business by the state because he didn't do things properly. Now, I think he has until next week to appeal. If he appeals, he will have, like, time to keep running the business. But this is kind of like the Kirk Bankhead saga. Of course, he says it's all retribution, all about politics. So he's being singled out because of who he is. Department of Revenue very dryly says it's not how it works with their agency. But for him, it's a little bit of a challenge financially right now.
Yeah, you know, I keep thinking that this is the last week we're going to talk about him when he gets out of the race or whatever. But I suspect we will be seeing more of Kirk going forward. That will do it for Rewind this week. I am Anjuvan Wagtendonk.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
See you next week.
This program was brought to you from the Margaret Farrell Studio.
Rewind. Your Week in Review is sponsored by the Wisconsin Realtors Association, bringing Wisconsin communities to life with great homes, businesses, and neighborhoods. The Wisconsin Realtors Association, the voice of real estate.